Who's been here more than 2 years, the boys? Who's been here less than 2 years? Okay, who's been here less than 1 year? And you've been here, you're still not here. You don't know if you're here. Okay, so let's try this. All the Upanayanis and all the Pravishikas. Okay? Let's try the Sahana Vavatu. All right? Hare He Ha! Now, whoever didn't just now chant, everybody else, now you guys chant, okay? Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahadeyam Karavavahai Tejasvinavahi Tamastu Chapter 3. A very nice, saintly person. Quote, there has not been, there will not be, such benefactors of the highest merits as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees have been. The offer of other benefits is only a deception. It is rather a great harm, whereas the benefit done by him and his followers is the truest and greatest eternal benefit. This benefit is not for one particular country, causing mischief to another, but it benefits the whole universe. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So it's an important thing. Nectar of devotion, one of the main points it's given in the first chapter, is that the devotional service, that is one auspicious activity. It's the actual auspicious activity. And it's the highest welfare. So auspiciousness means whatever gives a good result, right? Pious or auspicious gives a good result. Impious or inauspicious gives a bad result, right? So the material gives a good result, but only temporary. But the spiritual auspicious gives eternal, right? So it's the most auspicious activity. And then of welfare, welfare means where you're doing something for someone else's benefit, right? So then the highest benefit is that something that will give everybody benefit. Right? Because otherwise, then something that benefits one person doesn't benefit another. Right? Does that make sense? But, so that means, highest willful means it benefits everybody. Now, of this, then the material can never benefit everybody because everybody has a different nature. Right? You can group people together, but you can never get the common goal. So the only way to do that is if you're basing it on the spiritual platform, because everybody then is servant of Krishna. That on that platform, then that welfare work means what makes someone God conscious, that everybody in the world benefits, and by one group of persons becoming God conscious, it doesn't affect another one badly. Right? Everybody gets benefited. Does this make sense? Yeah? Okay. And I'm just thinking why the little dinky ones more in the back, but because they're too short to see. You know what I'm saying? They don't have to be right in the front. They just should be up a little farther where they can see. Okay? Does that make sense? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, no one is more of giving, benefit than Lord Chaitanya and his associates. And in fact, many people are giving harm. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. Because they seem to be giving benefit, but actually what they're doing is making one more bodily conscious. That's one thing about welfare work. It's always generally more sentimental and something definitely connected with the body. Right? Some physical, emotional, sensual, social element like that. Does that make sense? So it just makes one more bodily conscious. What I'm saying? So that's the thing is that... Yeah. Abhay's friend, Narendranath Malik, was insistent. He wanted Abhay to see a sadhu from Mayapur. Narendranath, was he the one that they used to go on the pram? The name doesn't quite strike it, but yeah, it came up before about Narendranath.
It wasn't Malik, but I don't think it was Narendranath.
Yeah, because whoever it was, he was like from the top Malik family. Yeah, Surendranath. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Maybe they're brothers. Surendranath, Narendranath. They do that sometimes. Indian families, you have everybody's got the same, but they're slightly yours, like Amba, Ambika, Ambalika, all the sisters. Naren. Oh, okay. That's where you get Naren. Okay, Naren's short for Narendranath. Well, it's just like a Jagai and Madai. Jagai is short for Jagadananda, and Madai is short for Madhavananda. Right? So Jagadananda and Madhavananda came Jagai Madai.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same ring.
Naren and some of his friends had already met the sadhu at his nearby ashram on Ultadanga Junction Road, and now they wanted Abhai's opinion. Everyone within their circle of friends considered Abhay the leader. So if Naren could tell the others that Abhay also had a high regard for the sadhu, then that would confirm their own estimations. Abhay was reluctant to go, but Naren pressed him. They stood talking amidst the passers-by on the crowded early evening street. As the traffic of horse-drawn hackneys, ox carts, and occasional auto taxis and motor buses moved noisily on the road. So even then they've always been noisy. Naren put his hand firmly around his friend's arm, trying to drag him forward, while Abhay Smaller smiled but stubbornly pulled the other way. So you see, as much of the time those who are, they don't get so involved in that, they're more sober in this and that. So, you know, in the earlier ages sometimes they're taken as more serious or not, but as it goes and they take them as, you know, more of a leader and stuff like that. Naren argued that since they were only a few blocks away, they should at least pay a short visit. Abai laughed and asked to be excused. People could see that the two young men were friends, but it was a curious sight. The handsome young man dressed in white khadi kurta and dhoti being pulled along by his friend. Naren explained that the sadhu, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, was a Vaishnava and a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of his disciples, a sannyasi, had visited the Mullock house and invited them to meet Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. A few of the Mullocks had gone to see him and had been very much impressed. But Abai remained skeptical. "Oh no, I know all these sadhus," he said. "I am not going." Right? Remember, he used to have his father would invite four sadhus every day. So he's, you know, kind of like seen them all. Like that. Oh, it says right here. Abai had seen many sadhus in his childhood. Every day his father had entertained at least three or four in his home. Some of them were no more than beggars, and some even smoked ganja. Gurmohan had been very liberal in allowing anyone who wore the saffron robes of a sannyasi to come. But did it mean that though a man was no more than a beggar or a ganja smoker, he had to be considered saintly just because he dressed as a sannyasi or was collecting funds in the name of building a monastery or could influence people with his speech? Right. So someone's just dressed, someone's collecting funds, or someone is just, is good at talking, because you have that. You have it all over the world, but in India especially, they have people that are expert speakers. I mean, expert speakers. They can speak so nicely. Very intellectually, or very sweetly, or some way, in other words, very attractive. And then that's then their basis. Otherwise, then they're not actually very saintly. So, So then, from Mano, what does he say that if you are giving charity to someone who's not actually a Brahmin, but is claiming to be, what's the benefit? Yeah, double, like that. So there's still some benefit. Just that because they present themselves that way, you deal with them that way, right? You know, you have to be intelligent not to get cheated, but you deal in that way, you get double the benefit, right? But the purpose is that you can get, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands times the benefit if they are bona fide. So, you know what I'm saying? So it's a touch better than nothing. You know, it's just like almost. In other words, it's recognized as better than ordinary welfare work, just feeding poor people or things like that, right? Because there's the consideration of their position. Right? Yes. No, by and large, they were a disappointing lot. Abai had even seen a man in his neighborhood who was a beggar by occupation. In the morning, when others dressed in their work clothes and went to their jobs, this man would put on saffron cloth and go out begging, and in this way earn his livelihood. But was it fitting that such a so-called sadhu be paid a respectful visit, as if he were a guru? Naren argued that he felt that this particular sadhu was a very learned scholar, and that Abhai should at least meet him and judge for himself. Abai wished that Naren would not behave this way, but finally he could no longer refuse his friend, right, being dragged down the street for many blocks. Because then Mahatma Gandhi wrote, then Mahatma Gandhi, then the next one up is, the next main road is Gray Street. Yeah, that's up. It's up quite a bit. Yeah, Bidan and all those things, but there's Gray Street's the next big street, and then after that, then it turns the corner. The main street turns the corner, it goes to Sham Bazaar. So then the next main road after it, that means it turns, but if you keep going straight, the next road is the Ultadanga Road. You know, I mean, there's a lot of gullies in between. But as far as the main roads, then that's the next, that's why I said it's only a few blocks. You know, there Prabhupada would walk, you know, they'd walk 10 miles or something, you know, just to save the money on the tram. So then, you know, like the 5-6 blocks is not so much. Together they walked past the Parshnath Jain temple to one Ultadunga with its sign, Bhaktivinod Asan, announcing it to be the quarters of the Gaudiya Math. When they inquired at the door, a young man recognized Mr. Mullick, Naren. Mr. Mullick, Naren had previously given a donation, and immediately escorted them up to the roof of the second floor and into the presence of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who was sitting and enjoying at the early morning atmosphere with a few disciples and guests. Sitting with his back very straight, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared tall. He was slender, his arms were long, and his complexion was fair and golden. He wore round bifocals with simple frames. His nose was sharp, his forehead broad, and his expression was very scholarly, yet not at all timid. The vertical markings of Vaishnav Tilak on his forehead were familiar to Abhay, as were the simple sannyas robes that draped over his right shoulder, leaving the other shoulder and half his chest bare. He wore tulsi neckbeads, and the clay Vaishnav markings of Tilak were visible on his throat, shoulder, and upper arms. A clean white brahminical thread was looped around his neck and draped across his chest. Abhay and Naren, having both been raised in Vaishnav families, immediately offered prostrate obeisances at the sight of the revered sannyasi. While the two young men were still rising and preparing to sit, before any preliminary formalities of conversation had begun, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta immediately said to them, "You are educated young men. Why don't you preach Lord Chaitanya's message throughout the whole world?" Straightforward. Right? You haven't even asked them, you know, anything. You just say, "You look intelligent. Why don't you preach?" Abhay could hardly believe what he had just heard. They had not even exchanged views, yet this sadhu was telling them what they should do. Sitting face to face with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Abhay was gathering his wits and trying to gain a comprehensible impression. But this person had already told them to become preachers and go all over the world. Abhay was immediately impressed, but he wasn't going to drop his intelligent skepticism. After all, there were assumptions in what the sadhu had said. Abhay had already announced himself by his dress to be a follower of Gandhi, and he felt the impulse to raise an argument. Yet as he continued to listen to Bhaktisiddhanta speak, he also began to felt won over by the sadhu's strength of conviction. He could sense that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta didn't care for anything but Lord Chaitanya, and that this was what made him great. This was why followers had gathered around him, and why Abhay himself felt drawn, inspired, and humbled, and wanted to hear more. But he felt obliged to make an argument to test the truth. Drawn irresistibly into discussion, Abhay spoke up in answer to the words Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had so tersely spoken in the first seconds of their meeting. No, tersely is. You know tersely? No? You didn't see him? He was that new kid that came by the other day. Anyone knows tersely?
Just means he kind of just says it, not really. It's not. I mean.
You're saying that that new boy is kind of short. Short to the point. Does that mean he's got a pointy head? Or maybe it's a pointy nose. Which? Not sure. So short to the point. You know, just not. It's not blunt. It's not so much abrupt. It's just very concise. Very, you know, spoken in a very clear, direct way. So that would be terse, you know, and with no elaboration. What do you think? So I think we should let him in. Or? Who will hear your Chaitanya's message? Abai queried. We are a dependent country. First, India must become independent. How can we spread Indian culture if we are under British rule? Right. So he's making, if we're going to spread it all over the world, but India itself, its culture is not really manifest because they're being managed by the British. They're controlled by the British. So unless India is free, then how will India's message go around the world? That was the point Prabhupada brought up. Abai had not asked haughtily, just to be provocative. Yet his question was clearly a challenge. If we were to take this sadhu's remark to them as a serious one, and there was nothing in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's demeanor to indicate that he had not been serious, Abai felt compelled to question how he could propose such a thing while India was still dependent. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta replied in a quiet, deep voice that Krishna consciousness didn't have to wait for a change in Indian politics, nor was it dependent on who ruled. Krishna consciousness was so important, so exclusively important, that it could not wait. Abai was struck by his boldness. How could he say such a thing? The whole world of India beyond this little Ultadanga rooftop was in turmoil and seemed to support what Abai had said. Many famous leaders of Bengal, many saints, even Gandhi himself, men who are educated and spiritually minded, all might well have asked the same question, challenging this sadhu's relevancy, and yet he was dismissing everything and everyone as if they were of no consequences. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta continued, whether one power or another ruled was a temporary situation, but the eternal reality is Krishna consciousness, and the real self is the spirit soul. No man-made political system, therefore, could actually help humanity. This was the verdict of the Vedic scriptures and the line of spiritual masters. Although everyone is an eternal servant of God, when one takes himself to be the temporary body and regards the nation of his birth as worshipable, he comes under illusion. The leaders and followers of the world's political movements, including the movement for Swaraj, were simply cultivating this illusion. Real welfare work, whether individual, social, or political, should help prepare a person for his next life and help him reestablish his eternal relationship with the Supreme. So it's the whole idea is whoever's managing the country, whatever's the political situation, then that doesn't actually have anything to do with the nature of the soul, because it's making one be more identifying with the place of birth, with one's nation, all these different things. So it's not addressing the spiritual, because it's actually just a political situation. So the point is if someone is God conscious, technically it doesn't actually matter what political system you're using, right? Because being God conscious is separate, is not controlled by politics, right? The two separate things. And at the same, yeah. And as we see Lord Chaitanya, they were under Mohammedan rule, and still Krishna consciousness was going on. And so now they're under British rule. So actually you could be Krishna conscious no matter what the administration was. Does that make sense? And of checking this other thing and correcting that, okay, very nice, but establishing the eternal is more important. Because if that's there, then everybody becomes God conscious. Right? The soul is benefited eternally. The other, you may change the political nature of the country, but then after you die, what happens to you? Right? That's the whole point. So this, as he's saying, is therefore more important, more urgent. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had articulated these ideas many times before in his writings. Quote, there has not been, there will not be, such benefactors of the highest merit as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers have been. The author of other benefits is only a deception. It is rather a great harm, whereas the benefit done by him and his followers is the truest and greatest eternal benefit. This benefit is not for one particular country causing mischief to another, but it benefits the whole universe. The kindness that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has shown to jivas absolves them eternally from all wants, from all inconveniences, and from all the distresses. That kindness does not produce any evil, and the jivas who have it will not be the victims of the evils of the world. As Abhay listened attentively to the arguments of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he recalled a Bengali poet who had written that even less advanced civilizations, like China and Japan, were independent, and yet India labored under political oppression. Abhay knew well the philosophy of nationalism, which stressed that Indian independence had to come first. An oppressed people was a reality. The British slaughter of innocent citizens was a reality, and independence would benefit people. Spiritual life was a luxury that could be afforded only after independence. In the present times, the cause of national liberation from the British was the only relevant spiritual movement. The people's cause was in itself God. Yet, because Abhay had been raised a Vaishnava, he appreciated what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was saying. Abhay had already concluded that this was certainly not just another questionable sadhu, and he perceived the truth in what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said. The sadhu wasn't concocting his own philosophy, and he wasn't simply proud or belligerent, even though he spoke in a way that kicked out practically every other philosophy. He was speaking the eternal teachings of the Vedic literature and the sages, and Abhay loved to hear it. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta speaking sometimes in English and sometimes in Bengali, and sometimes quoting the Sanskrit verses of the Bhagavad Gita, spoke of Sri Krishna as the highest Vedic authority. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had declared that a person should give up whatever duty he considers religious and surrender unto him the personality of Godhead. Sarvadharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. And the Srimad Bhagavatam confirmed the same thing. Dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. All other forms of religion are impure and should be thrown out. Only Bhagavat Dharma, performing one's duties to please the Supreme Lord, should remain. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's presentation was so cogent that anyone who accepted the Shastras would have to accept his conclusion. So making the point is that there's so many elements of Dharma. Dharma means the nature of something. So there's so many aspects of that, but the real Krishna is making the point that all these you have to put aside to be surrendered to Krishna, that serving Krishna is actually your most important element, you know, your most important need, right? Not these others, right? Others may have some value in connection with the Lord, but on their own, then they may be very nice, but the problem is you'll end up remaining within the material world. Does that make sense? Yes? No? What about you? Yeah. So what would be your advice then to Gandhiji? Not sure. So you would tell him how many spoons of muri would you put into the milk? None. Just drink the milk straight, or eating the muri straight, or...
He's always got the answer, but somehow, when it comes to real...
No. Yeah, no, it's true. He does. He yaks all day. Yeah. He's always talking.
And he seems a little quiet.
Hmm. Okay. So does that mean that he is... How you say? There's a saying that if you have a pot, you know, a brass pot, and it's full of water, you tap it with a piece of metal, it'll make no sound, it'll just go boom. But if the pot is empty and you tap it, it'll make so much sound. And then there's a saying in Bengali, I think it's, I don't remember it, but it's something about meaning many pots. Like you have many empty pots, and you throw them all together, they make so much noise. So that's when you have a whole bunch of empty pots in one place at one time.
We seem to have no dearth of empty pots.
Oh, okay. The question is then, I guess it's important, you know, so then those pots in the wintertime, we wrap them up in green chudders.
Various colors. Oh. Multicolored.
Oh, okay. So there's a natural connection between pots and monsters? Pot and monsters.
Monsters have pothead.
Pothead. But Katodgacha had a pothead. Like that. Yeah, well, that's gata means is pot, so Katodgacha means pothead. So he was the original pothead. The people were now faithless, said Bhaktisiddhanta, and therefore they no longer believed that devotional service could remove all anomalies, even on the political scene. He went on to criticize anyone who was ignorant of the soul and yet claimed to be a leader. He even cited names of contemporary leaders and pointed out their failures. And he emphasized the urgent need to render the highest good to humanity by educating people about the eternal soul and the soul's relationship to Krishna and devotional service. Right? And so this was back in the 1920s, so 90 years ago. Like that.
Amazing that, I mean, it's not the first time I've thought about it, but you see Srila Prabhupada's like method of preaching and how he would talk and where he would quote from is so much similar to spiritual master. The other disciples who didn't necessarily speak like that would criticize Prabhupada that he's doing things differently.
Such a they're doing differently, but actually he was actually following. He was preaching in the same way. He actually went to the West. He was successful. He wanted to cooperate together, which they didn't want to do. You know, he went to the West. They didn't go, or they weren't successful. You know, he was a bold preacher, which most of them were afraid to do, like that. So, yeah, the differences were different than them, not different from... So that's very interesting. Yeah. Like that. It said on the danda, then you have the prash at the top, the little bent thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a few definitions of what it means. So I guess one is that it represents Paramatma. Mm-hmm. Like that. Because generally on the top of the danda, everybody has something according to Sampradaya that, you know, it represents how they view, I guess, the order or its duties. So then Paramatma means that, you know, you're always speaking about Paramatma, you're always, you know, absorbed in the Lord, like that. It means because the sticks are body, mind, and words. Then Baladeva Vidyabhushan added a fourth stick, which means Atmanivedanam, or full surrender. I think even the Shris used the fourth stick, like that. Others just used three sticks. Then, but another explanation of the prash is that it's the, how you say, you know, like in the battlefield, you have a special axe that's curved like that, okay, just for cutting off heads. Yeah. You know, like the Halliburtons, I think they're called.
Halbert.
Yeah. Okay, it's the long stick, and it's got that special. It's not out like a battle axe. It's the other way.
Yeah.
You know, it's specifically for fighting. I guess it keeps it close, and then for cutting off heads. So some say that it also means that it's for going out and destroying, you know, how you say, the material concept. Yeah. So it would appear that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used it more in the halbert, you know, sense. Uh-huh. Yes, but preaching about Paramatma, but in such a way that, you know,
like, soft like a rose, hard like
Yeah, hard like a hard as a thunderbolt, soft as a rose. Like that. So Prabhupada was like that also. He could speak very soft, or if he, those who he yelled at would always say it's like the whole universe was, you know, empty. Yeah, it's like it was that strong.
Prabhupada was a recipient of that one.
Yeah, I would think. I'm sure he would have gotten it. Yeah, I remember, I forget who it was that got it. Somebody in Prabhupada's room, and I remember Bhavananda came out and was going, "Thunderbolts, thunderbolts." Yeah, just completely devastated whoever it was. But everybody would get, that was the thing in those days, is that heavy chastisement, then everybody would get more enthusiastic. Nowadays, heavy chastisement, then they get bent out of shape, lose all their enthusiasm, you know, no inspiration, or feel bad, you know, anything but what you actually expect.
Yeah, because it's the identity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other is your servant, so if you've been wrong, so you're chastised, so you're going to, as a servant, do better. Here, then, it's like their whole basis of existence is. Abhai had never forgotten the worship of Lord Krishna or his teachings in Bhagavad Gita, and his family had also always worshipped Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose mission Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was espousing. As these Gaudiya Math people worship Krishna, He also had worshipped Krishna throughout his life and had never forgotten Krishna. But now he was astounded to hear the Vaishnava philosophy presented so masterfully. Despite his involvement in college, marriage, the national movement, and other affairs, he had never forgotten Krishna. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was now stirring up within him his original Krishna consciousness. By the words of the spiritual master, not only was he remembering Krishna, but he felt his Krishna consciousness being enhanced 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times. What had been unspoken in Abhai's boyhood, what had been vague in Jagannath Puri, what had been distracted, what he had been distracted from at college, and what he had been protected in by his father, now surged forth within Abhai in responsive feelings, and he wanted to keep it. He felt himself defeated, but he liked it. He suddenly realized that he had never before been defeated, but this defeat was not a loss, it was an immense gain. Right? Because otherwise, like before, he wanted, you know, a toy gun, so he got it, and then he wants a second one. So, you know, whatever it was, he always got. So this is the first time it was ever defeated. Srila Prabhupada, I was from a Vaishnava family, so I could appreciate what he was preaching. Of course, he was speaking to everyone, but he found something in me, and I was convinced about his argument and mode of presentation. I was so much struck with wonder. I could understand, here is the proper person who can give a real religious ideal. All right. So, you have this element. Okay, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because he's bona fide, he can invoke these feelings and everything. He's actually able to present it, actually in his pure and proper way. And then seeing here is that he was speaking to everyone, but in specific to Srila Prabhupada, because the one thing that you hear is you don't hear that the other ones that were going with him, the other mullahs, had taken such a stand on nationalism. Right? So he was the one in Kadi. It didn't say two boys in Kadi. It just said him. So that would one could look at it that, okay, you have just your regular boys, and then you have this one who's a nationalist. Right? So of the two, which would be better for preaching to? Yes, that's it. Because the other ones are just part of the scene. Whatever's going on, they're doing. But to be a nationalist, then you had to actually dress different, act different. You know, your values were different. Like give up your, you know, your the Western education, give up all these different things, you know. So that would take a lot of conviction, a lot of focus. It means you had to think about it and be determined. You know, and because it was being presented more, you know, from the intellectual spiritual platform, then that would be, right? So that would, but they're going to be the hardest to convince. Right? Because they have their conviction. But once you convince them, then they'll be able to convince others. Well, the person who is, you know, appreciates and this and that, nice. That's a good thing. And it's there's some mild, because Naren then brought Srila Prabhupada to the meeting, right? So something is there, but we never hear of anybody else in the family becoming serious about interacting or becoming part of or supporting the Gaudiya Math, other than, you know, giving some donations. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why someone knows what they want, is focused, and gets it done, even if what they're doing is stupid, then the problem is being stupid, not that they're doing what they want or they know what they want. You understand? Someone who knows what they want is making the endeavors to get it, then they can, you know, be determined about Krishna consciousness and try to get it. Right? Does that make sense?
Because they have the quality of discipline.
Yeah, they have discipline, they have focus, they have goals, they're willing to work, willing to take a stand, their identity is strong. Right? Because here you're putting on the kadi, that means everybody can tell you're a nationalist. Anybody else, then they could just say, you know, I'm fine. But that means everybody knows you're a nationalist. Does that make sense? So you're willing to wear. So therefore we can see from the beginning, Srila Prabhupada, you know, didn't have any problem with that. So he could wear the dress that matched his conviction. So therefore, as a nationalist or as a devotee, you know, he could wear, you know, what was his determination. Does that make sense? So that's why we wear our own clothes. We dress according to our conviction. That's the principle. Does that make sense? Then you can tell you're convinced about the philosophy also. Otherwise, then you may be convinced about philosophy, but not the culture or this or that. You know, I'm saying there's going to be something that's weaker. It was late. Abhaya Naren had been talking with him for more than 2 hours. One of the brahmacharis gave them each a bit of prasadam in their open palms, and they rose gratefully and took their leave. Okay, so we'll end here. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.